Grantaran Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's 519 is the verse today. So today we're reading from the fifth chapter of the first canto, and the text is 19. This verse is spoken in the midst of Narada's instructions to Vyas. And Vyasadeva was feeling a little disheartened, the word probably used despondent, not completely satisfied, after he had compiled all the Vedas, all the rules and regulations for human society in written form. He wasn't completely happy. And so he approached his spiritual master and asked, "Why is this? Why am I not so happy? I would think that after doing this service, I would be in bliss." So Narada begins to explain, "Well, you've missed one very important aspect of knowledge, is this direct knowledge of devotion to Krishna in a direct form." And so he begins explaining and glorifying the process of devotional service. And in that glories of devotional service, there are some of these wonderful byproducts. And so this one byproduct we'll be focusing in on today, of how Krishna will help his devotees personally. And so that's the subject of today's verse, and we will chant it now. Is this the Brahma Samhita? Navai jano jatu katanchan navrajan Mukunda sevyanan yavad anga samshritim Smaran mukandangri upagu hanam punar Vihatumi chenna rasa grahojana Navaijano jatu katancha navrajan Mukunda sevyan yavad anga samshritim Smaran mukandhang griyu paguhanam punar Vihatumi chenna rasa grahojana Please chant better than me. Thank you. Before class today, Kalakanta Prabhu said that the devotees are exhausted from a long semester and they can't wait for the spring break. So there's always a reason why we are a little down. So don't take too much notice in this. Next. And she is never under the weather. She is always right on. Thank you for saving the verse today. Next. Anyone more?
No.
Okay. Na. Never. Vai. Certainly. Jana. A person. Jatu. At any time. Katanjana. Somehow or other. Avrajet. Does not undergo. Mukunda Sevi. The devotee of the Lord. Anyavat. Like others. Anga. O my dear. Samshritim. Material existence. Smaran. Remembering. Mukunda Angri. The lotus feet of the Lord. Upaguhanam. Embracing. Puna. Again. Vihatum. Willing to give up. Ichet. Desire. Na. Never. Rasagraha. One who has relished the mellow. Jana. Person. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of the Lord sometimes falls down, somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruitive workers, etc. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So we have microphones. It is a little longer purport, so if everybody could read maybe two sentences each so that everybody has a chance to stay enlivened and awake.
Two sentences, yes.
That's a good devotee
of the Lord automatically becomes uninterested in the enchantment of material existence because he is rasagraha, or one who has tasted the sweetness of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. There are certainly many instances where devotees of the Lord have fallen down due to uncongenial association, just like fruitive workers who are always prone to degradation.
But even though he falls down, a devotee is never to be considered the same as a fallen karmi. A karmi suffers the result of his own fruitive reactions, whereas a devotee is reformed by chastisement directed by the Lord himself.
The sufferings of an orphan and the sufferings of a beloved child of a king are not one and the same. An orphan is really poor because he has no one to take care of him, but a beloved son of a rich man, although he appears to be on the same level as the orphan, is always under the vigilance of his capable father.
A devotee of the Lord, due to wrong association, sometimes imitates the fruitive workers. The fruitive workers want to lord it over the material world. Similarly, a neophyte devotee foolishly thinks of accumulating some material power in exchange for devotional service.
Such foolish devotees are sometimes put into difficulty by the Lord Himself. As a special favor, He may remove all material paraphernalia. By such action, the bewildered devotee is forsaken by all friends and relatives, and so he comes to his senses again by the mercy of the Lord, and is set right to execute his devotional service.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also said that such fallen devotees are given a chance to take birth in a family of high-qualified brahmanas or in a rich mercantile family. A devotee in such a position is not as fortunate as one who is chastised by the Lord and put into a position seemingly of helplessness.
The devotee who becomes helpless by the will of the Lord is more fortunate than those who are born in good families. The fallen devotees born in a good family may forget the lotus feet of the Lord because they are less fortunate. But the devotee who is put into a forlorn condition is more fortunate because he swiftly returns to the lotus feet of the Lord, thinking himself helpless all around.
Pure devotional service is so spiritually relishable that a devotee becomes automatically uninterested in material enjoyment. That is a sign of perfection in progressive devotional service.
A pure devotee continuously remembers the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna and does not forget him even for a moment, not even in exchange for all the opulence of the three worlds.
My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruitive workers, etc., because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So this verse is often quoted, often cited, in two ways. Sometimes in a very relieved situation, or sometimes not so happy. So it can be taken in two ways. One way is that, oh, we always have Krishna to help us, and that's certainly true. But then the other way is someone may not like this aspect of Krishna. And as Prabhupada says in the purport, sometimes there are those who actually intentionally go away from Krishna. And when that happens, they almost dislike this feature of Krishna's mercy, that I want to enjoy, but I can't, because now I know that there is no enjoyment in the material world. So sometimes it becomes a subject of contention. That and we've seen devotees in our movement, they've gone away and they've said this, you know, I cannot enjoy like I did before. I wish I could just forget it all. There is a popular cinematic presentation about 8 years ago that became popular amongst the devotees, and I won't mention the name so that you don't go out and try to see it, but it was, the plot was that there was reality and there was illusion, and that there was it was almost a mechanical way that one can detach themselves from illusion, and those who had detached themselves are able to go back in and out of illusion, but with the knowledge of what illusion was. And so there was one person in particular who didn't like that, who wanted to strike a deal that, you know, I'll give you this information, but I want to forget everything. I don't want to remember that this is illusion anymore. I just want to be, what is it? Ignorance is bliss. I want... He said that too. Okay. Well, okay. It seems like we've all seen this. So it's a fact that once you know what is reality, apart from the illusion, then it is very difficult from then on to enjoy that illusion again. And this is, as Narada is saying, this is an actual mercy of Krishna. It is, because what have we been studying? We've been studying what is the relationship with Krishna and how do we act in that relationship and what is it for? This whole week, and I think starting last week on Friday, this whole week is to prepare us for our next portion of our studies, of which is direct hearing about Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. And to do that, we have to be in a certain state of consciousness. So to do that, this whole week, we're kind of hearing of what Krishna actually does for us, what that intimate relationship is. And here's one of them. When we say to Krishna, or when we first come to Krishna, we start learning about Krishna, this Abhideya, we start reawakening, understanding what is that relationship with Krishna, Sambandha, excuse me. Then we go to Abhideya, and that actual performance of service is like a consummation of Krishna, I want this relationship with you, and Krishna equally invests himself in that relationship. And then this is one of the products of that, that Krishna helps us, even when we don't want the help. So I thought maybe we can, we've all experienced this, I think, whether we've been hearing about Krishna consciousness for a few months or a few years or many years, we've all already experienced that when I kind of drift away, something has pulled me back. So maybe, and this is specifically talking about a fall down. And I'll go into that a little more later, but a fall down may be just our forgetfulness, our being diverted away a little bit. And so let's maybe we could share where we actually personally have some realization of this in our lives, where either I fell down or we may not want to share that. But a fall down of forgetfulness where I forgot Krishna or where I diverted my attention elsewhere, and then all of a sudden that thing, what is that thing? That's Krishna, as proved in this verse. That was Krishna pulling us back. So does anybody have anything? Yes, Arjuna. A microphone, please.
2 or 3 years back, I moved out of Krishna House to stay in that apartment, like 5 blocks away. And I remember Kalakan Prabhu in the morning, he said, like the day I was moving out, he said that Arjuna is going 5 blocks away, but he's 5 painful blocks away. So I was thinking that it's only 5 blocks, it's only 5 minutes long, it's not a big deal. And then when I actually moved out, after some time, I started realizing that coming here, like even 5 minutes walk is, I have to think, should I come to Krishna House or not? It's going to be 5 minutes walk. So that small wasn't. So what happened after some time, like in last fall, when the summer ended, I was thinking, okay, now if I get funding this semester, I will buy, because that house was small, so I thought I'll buy a big comfortable house if I get my funding in the fall. And I'll come to Krishna House, but I'll also have a nice house, comfortable. So, but that was moving farther away. Like for that, I had to go like 34th Street, just farther. So, what happened? My funding was gone. I didn't get any funding this third semester. So I had to come to Nand Kumar Prabhu's house when he left. So then, when I realized that that actually living there, I realized it's so much closer to where I was 5 blocks away. No, it's so much easier to come here, and then finally I moved into Krishna House. So.
Yeah.
So.
I would rather be living in a devotee's closet than be Lord Brahma. That's specifically Prabhupada says in this purport, and he's quoting from the seventh canto, and Prabhupada took this verse as very personal to himself. Yasyaham anugrahami, that, you know, Krishna, as a favor, he'll take everything, those impediments away. And so this is the eyes of the devotee. They'll see, oh, I'm failing. I want to do something material, but I'm failing. You know, but we can see that as Prabhupada says here, as a special favor, he, Krishna, may remove all material paraphernalia, all funding. So it helps us remember. Any more from this side? Memories? Experiences? Yes? Well, Tina?
So it's been like about 5 years that I met the devotees, and for the first year and a half or two, I was going to the temple a lot. You know, it was just like, yay, great, you know. And then it just kind of faded, and I was like, okay, I really want to go back to like going out. And my friendships had actually not been as strong because I wasn't going out anymore. I wasn't doing the same things I used to do. And so I wanted to go back to that because those people were important to me. So it was really funny because every time I would try to go out, I would always run into a devotee. And it would be so, like, we would be in L.A., and it's like the devotees are in Harinam on Friday nights. And then on Saturdays, the devotees are distributing books or something. And every time I would go, I would run into someone, and I would be like, oh, my God, this is so weird. And I was actually embarrassed to, like, not be doing that because it's actually what I wanted to do, but I was trying to do something different. And then after that, I was like, okay, I'll keep chanting. I'll keep going to the temple just to hang out and not kind of get too far away. And then just last year I was given the opportunity to come here and do that, and my plan was only to do it for 2 months and then go back to like working and, you know, doing my materialistic plan, and it didn't work out that way. But it was really nice how I can actually see that Krishna pulling back and putting things in my way to realize that I actually have a choice of living a better life. It's really nice.
Thank you. Sukar? Microphone, please.
I feel like when we are living amongst devotees, then we take so many things for granted, and we do not really get the opportunity to see at many times how Krishna is helping us progress towards that devotional service, make advancement. But when I was staying outside the association, and I remember at that point of time, even very little things in regular routine life, I would see that how Krishna is helping me in remembering him like this, so forth, every day. And I started appreciating how how association of devotees is so important, and the things that we internalize when we are there with them. And I used to think that I might be somewhere else, which I'm not. And that is so clear when I'm all by myself and trying to remember Krishna, and trying to follow the regulative principles, chant my rounds every day, and so forth. And that just makes me appreciate how Krishna arranges for us to be in association of devotees so that we can make progress.
Yeah. We sometimes, like you said, we take for granted how we're living with devotees who are really endeavoring to reawaken and act in their relationship with Krishna. We take that for granted. We also take for granted we're with the Lord themselves in their deity form. We're in the Dham. Just by being here, there is an effect on us. We may not be able to see it. We may still have trouble concentrating on our rounds, but the effect is there. It's real. And you know, by these examples, we can hear. Any more? It's so much better to hear yours than to hear me speak stuff. Go ahead.
This has happened just, I think, about two to 3 months after taking up, no, actually, about 4 months after taking up Krishna consciousness. had to enlist in the army, and then so in the first 3 months of the army, we have to go through this basic military training, and there it's pretty intense because you know you can't go back home for the first month, and after that, subsequently, you can only go back during the weekends for like 24 hours. So then, you know, I started eating meat again because I thought this whole vegetarian thing is not working. You need the strength and all those things. I was in that kind of maya. And I stopped chanting. And so what happened was that after some time, one of my friends invited me to a concert, where a drama where he was acting as Narasingadev. He was a devotee. So I thought, okay, let me just go. And I just sat in the back row because I didn't want to get too involved. And then somehow or other, right in the row in front of me was the devotee who was preaching and training me up in Krishna consciousness. Then I just said hi to him. Anyway, then he looked back at me. Then the way he looked at me was with so much love and concern. There was no judgment, nothing. He just looked at me with a lot of love and asked, how are you, that kind of thing. And that sort of melted my heart. And then from then on, I took up Krishna consciousness again, but it's much stronger than I was before.
Yeah, sometimes these things make you stronger. And Prabhupada would always quote this verse. He pulled me out. You know, Krishna just made these, he pulled me out, and just see what the result was, how enthusiastic he was to give us Krishna consciousness. Thank you, that was really nice. Any more? Don't be shy. I just have boring philosophy to talk about. This is
one famous story.
Yeah.
Devotee had said, I'm leaving Krishna consciousness. He went back to his home and he took up his old hobby, which was fishing. And the first time he went fishing, he went down and threw his line in the water and he got caught on something, pulled it up. It was a boot, and in the boot was a Bhagavad Gita.
You know, these things, Krishna is, you know, he helps us. Because we've once relished that taste of service, and what is that? Is it just a one-sided thing that we relish something, and it's no? But once it's a reciprocal thing. As we relished it, Krishna relished it as well. He relished that. Oh, this person has done something for me. A few classes back, I quoted this verse of in the Ajameel pastime, of where Krishna, or where Krishna's mentality of what, when he hears the devotees chant his name, what changes in his mentality, and Krishna says, because he's chanted my name, he's gotten my attention, and therefore I'm looking to them. I'm looking to care for them. So that relationship changes once we say that consummation of service. I want to do some service for you, Krishna. It's you know, just like any interaction. When somebody gives you something, what's the reaction? What happens? What you want to give something to that person? You want to reciprocate with them. And Krishna's just like that, and not only that. I was just hearing this morning, Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and he was talking about some of the things his father had taught him. And he said, his father many times would quote this, how we may give Krishna one thing with one hand, but Krishna, with his 10 hands, he gives us so much more. So again, just by our little bit of wanting to serve Krishna, doing a little service for Krishna, Krishna reciprocates, and he forever will give, make this promise true that he'll make us always be attracted to him again. Any more wonderful practical examples? Another one, good. All right, or a question? Microphone. There's another one over there. Okay. Well. Someone on?
That you said that it only takes once for us to chant Krishna's name and we've got his attention. What about in the case of King Daksha in the fourth canto when he's done so many sacrifices and he's so exalted, and but he still isn't really, like, he's killed by a demon. And so what's the difference? Like, you know, if he has chanted Krishna's names and he has done all these things that we could never imagine offering Krishna, so how come someone like that isn't?
Ultimately, he's still there, though. He's still getting the benefit, and the Hamsaguya prayers and all these different wonderful things in the Daksha. You know, so much Daksha reappears throughout Bhagavatam. You know, sometimes, oh, this is bad, but here, then there's good. So sometimes bad and good. So, you know, again, it's the devotee's desire ultimately will be fulfilled, but he still has that pulling toward Krishna. So if, yeah, we can, if we want to be fallen, we can be fallen. But will we be able to enjoy that fallen state as we did before, is what's being answered here, that no, we would not be able to. So Daksha always comes to his senses after all. You know, the Daksha Yogya, he came to his senses and he went and surrendered to Lord Shiva again. And time and time again, he comes to his senses. And that coming to the senses is with Krishna's help. Are there any more? It's hard to admit sometimes when we deviate or we fall away in our mentality, but it's a wonderful thing to see how Krishna is pulling us back. I wanted to go into with this topic because I wanted to go a little bit more into why this reciprocal nature is there, and Krishna himself tells us why. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's an incident of a fall down of his two doorkeepers, Jai and Vijay. They're in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, and they're performing this personal service to Krishna. You know, and every once in a while they'll see Vishnu, Narayan walking by, and it's like, oh yes, I'm his guard. I'm here at his door. I'm his doorstep. I'm his doormat. This is the mentality that's such a wonderful service. They're so attached to it, and they're having this relationship with Krishna, with Vishnu. But then they made a mistake, and they nobody gets to that door, first of all, unless you're qualified. But you know, what is the purpose of a doorkeeper, though? Well, the doorkeeper in Vaikuntha is just to greet those souls who are coming back. So for some reason they were a little bit in illusion at seeing these four Kumaras who were in the forms of small children, unclothed children, just kind of very innocent, walking around. And they said, "Whoa, who are you? You know, you can't come here." And so these Kumaras were offended that how dare you stop us? So. There is a very, I guess you could say, moving conversation that when Vishnu appears, when Narayan appears at the scene to fix this situation, he says some very wonderful things that are right on this point. So I wanted to read a few verses and a snippets of purport, and you know, not to put you to sleep, but it's, I think if you can hear it, you'll just. You key into why does Krishna feel so indebted to his devotee to do this? That even though the devotee may say, "I don't want you anymore, Krishna," he still appears in that devotee's mind and still pulls him back because there's this bond. So he says, "I am the servitor of my devotees. My lotus feet have become so sacred that they immediately wipe out all sin, and I have acquired such a disposition that the goddess of fortune does not leave me." So he said, "I am the servant of my devotees." We're always saying, we're the servant of Krishna. But again, once we do that, then Krishna feels immediately, he wants to reciprocate. "I want to serve my devotees." And Prabhupada says in this very wonderful beginning of this purport, tells us this relationship very intimately. The relationship between the Lord and his devotee is transcendentally beautiful. As a devotee thinks that it is due to being a devotee of the Lord that he is elevated in all good qualities, so the devotee thinks, all my good qualities are because I'm a devotee of the Lord. But what does the Lord think? The Lord also thinks that it is because of his devotion to the servitor that all his transcendental glories have increased. Because of Krishna's love for his devotees is that this relationship so special. It's reciprocal. It's not one way. It's never like an autocracy that I am the king and you are my servants. It's never like that with Krishna. He sees it as equal. And not only equal, but I am their servant. Partha Sarathi. He's driving the chariot of Arjuna. He's taking the servitorship of his devotee. In other words, as a devotee is always anxious to render service to the Lord, so the Lord is ever anxious to render service to the devotee. Imagine, you know, once we hear these things, and once we get this rasa graha, once we taste this mellow of sweetness of Krishna and his relationship, how will he ever let us forget it? The Lord admits herein that although he certainly has the quality that anyone who receives a slight particle of dust of the lotus feet becomes at once a great personality, that greatness is due to his affection for his devotee. So it's such a wonderful revelation. Prabhupada is revealing this actual relationship to us. And we just have to be observant when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam of these things. And then he says a few more verses, and then the one that really just like strikes you when he's taking all responsibility for this. He's talking to Jayavija, these servants of mine, they're my servants, they've done something wrong against you, not knowing the mind of their master. They've forgotten, you know, this relationship a little bit. Therefore, I ask a favor of you. He's actually praying to them. I'm asking a favor of you to please don't punish them too much. So this relationship is amazing. Please let them come back soon. He's not saying don't punish them. He's accepting that there should be a punishment, there should be some result of what they've done, but don't make it that they would ever forget me. Don't make it that they can never come back. Make sure. And so he's asking this directly on behalf of his devotees. So this is amazing. You know, when we actually contemplate this, and this is why once we do have that rasa graha, once we do taste that service, and once we make that effort and consummate that relationship by doing service, Krishna reciprocates in such a way where he takes all responsibility. So if we know that of Krishna, does that mean somebody could think, oh, well, then I'll just do any damn thing I want? No. Equally, we should be thinking, oh, how can I ever put Krishna in a situation where he would have to beg the pardon on my behalf? So it's constant, you know, just as there's we hear the very elevated constant reciprocal or competition between Krishna's beauty and the love of his devotees that always increases. So similarly, with Krishna's servant, as being Krishna's servant, that mentality of service, we're always thinking of Krishna's service, and Krishna's always thinking of serving us, and that's also shouldn't be like, yeah, Krishna can serve me, I'll do whatever I want. Therefore, one of the greatest offenses for chanting Krishna's name is to take it that cheaply. That, yeah, Krishna's very powerful. He has this, you know, towards devotees. He'll pardon me for whatever I may do. So I'll just do whatever I want. That shouldn't be the mentality. Prabhupada says in this purport, from this statement we can understand how anxious the Lord is to get his servitor back into Vaikuntha. Therefore, this incident proves that those who have once entered Vaikuntha can never fall down. The Lord is always anxious to get devotees back as soon as possible. So it's such a wonderful contemplation. As we perform devotional service, always in that, you know, very satisfied understanding that Krishna, you know, reactions, whatever reactions we may be getting, it is actually directed by Krishna. Tate nukampam shushamikshamano. We've quoted this quite often recently. How Krishna, you know, is directing. You know, these, you know, there's such a very small token reaction that we may get from a transgression, or when they do come, that we just remember Krishna and he will grant us this care, this direct personal care. And the more we, I guess, concentrate on chanting Hare Krishna, because again and again Prabhupada will, I had so many quotes, but Prabhupada will say that this relationship begins and ends with chanting of Hare Krishna. So the more care and attention we put into that, then the more, obviously, reciprocation we'll get from Krishna. So, again, this is a topic that usually brings lots of discussion. So we have some time. I miraculously ended early. One thing I did want to say, there was another one verse I wanted, kind of in relationship to this, that is like a warning for those who want to learn, and Kalakanta Prabhu puts this in the beginning of his book, God Who Dances, that if you're about to read this book, or if you come to Krishna consciousness, let me give you a warning that if you do, then your material life will be finished. You will no longer be able to enjoy material life. And the actual verse is, Rupa Goswami writes this, and it's quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the verse is, "My dear friend, if you are indeed attached to your worldly friends, do not look at the smiling face of Lord Govinda as he stands on the bank of the Yamuna at Keshigat. Casting sidelong glances, he places his flute to his lips, which seem like newly blossomed twigs. His transcendental body bending in three places appears very bright in the moonlight." So this picture, Rupa Goswami is painting this picture for our mind, to hold in our mind. But don't paint that picture if you want to enjoy materially. Because once you paint that picture, that'll be embossed on your, you know, when you close your eyes, you'll see it. When you open your eyes, you'll see him. So don't do it. Don't read Kalakanta's book if you want to. and the description, you know, Krishna is smarambangi. He's standing so exquisitely with three bends. He has the flute to his lips. And it's such a wonderful atmosphere. He's in Vrindavan, this beautiful place of Vrindavan, filled with creepers and birds and kunjas. And not only that, the most beautiful time in Vrindavan, when the moon is full and is reflecting off the Yamuna and reflecting off of his body. His body is reflecting out as well. This, you know, if you paint that in your mind, then you'll no longer have any attachment. And so we may think, well, yeah, I've seen that picture, but I still have material desires. So how do we answer that? Huh? Never enjoy them the same. This verse is the answer. You will never, once we have the rasa graha, once we taste that sweetness of Krishna's face, with his lips touching his flute, with, you know, his interactions with his devotees, when we hear his promise to Jayan Vijay and the four Kumaras, when we hear that, oh, we just can't enjoy again. So sorry to ruin any prospects, prospective material enjoyment. So then a whole nother topic, well, how do we enjoy spiritually? And that will be a topic for another class. So any more comments or questions?
It's puzzling. How do we have free will if once we taste Krishna consciousness, we can't enjoy material life? Does it mean if we take up Krishna consciousness, we trade in our free will?
No, the free will is always there. But it's seeing how the reactions are. They're coming from Krishna at that point.
If you're not free to go back to material life, how do you have free will anymore?
You are free. But perhaps in this life, you would not. And therefore, Prabhupada explains in part of this purport, there's two things that happen. You either suffer greatly right now and you see that as coming from Krishna, or you will take birth in a situation where you can again take up the process. So, yes, there is the prospect of complete forget, but you again will be in a position. Krishna is in yogas samchamanasa. When you deviate from the transcendental path, Krishna will put you in a situation of take birth in an aristocratic family or, yogic family where you can take it up again. But ultimately, here it says in this purport, there is no question that you can fall down from Vaikuntha, but Jayan Vijay fell down from Vaikuntha. And there's no question that we can eternally forget Krishna. Because we've come to the material world in forgetfulness of Krishna. But this is not internal. There are some theologies that, you will eternally never have the chance to come back to God again. There's paths like that that say that. But no, it is impossible. And when we look at the sojourn in the material world in face of eternality, no matter how long we've been here, it is very small, very short, flash. And devotees who realize that they're the Mahabhagavats, they're the transcendental. They see everything. They see everyone greater than them, and they see, it's not very long here. So, yes, we can try to enjoy, but even then, we can fall down, we can do so many things, and we can really try to forget, and we can go into ignorance, taking intoxicants to forget, help us forget, and we may forget for that life, and we may forget for another 180 lives or a million lives, but ultimately, again, from that service, Krishna will put us in a situation where we will once again remember him. So, yeah.
Asked that question, it reminded me of, like, if you are lactose intolerant, you still have the free will to drink milk if you want, but it's not going to feel good, so it's not
great.
Like you lost your free will like to take the milk, but your better judgment and your body is going to know like that's not actually going to work for you.
So.
I actually did have a question too. I'm going to give you an example of someone else's life because it's easier to see than in my own, but I was wondering about reciprocation. My mom is a spiritual life coach, and she has really great talent, but she's sometimes not getting enough clients because she charges a lot. And I am always saying to her, like, just offer your services as a gift to God. Like, don't worry about the monetary reciprocation. Just offer it to people, like, for free, and then just trust that God will provide for you. But I'm wondering, like, how does that balance work? Like, what action do we take? Do we just offer spiritual but I don't want to expect that Krishna is going to then provide for us. I'm a little confused about that balance.
When I had devotees over my house, we mentioned that when we talk about grihastha life, there's no book which says here's how you do grihastha life, and from this you will get a nice house with 5 acres of land with a picket fence, and because everybody has a different set of karmic, where their karma is in different locations, seed, fructifying, everybody has the ability to make money or the inability to make money. Those are all material things, whereas the spiritual side of things is a natural. And that isn't impeded by any of those things. But how exactly to get that, you know, because we see hundreds and thousands of different Grihastha devotees living slightly different. Some, very easily, the money comes, inheritance, and that's due to some portion of their karma. And they don't have to work, and then they can dedicate their lives to a certain thing. Some, they work like anything, and they still don't get it. And so at that point, then their faith has to come into play that, well, and this is Prabhupada's life and his example. He did work very hard, and he struggled very hard. And when his business started failing, he didn't like to say, I give it up. But no, he struggled even harder. But then he said, yasya ham anugrahami. This is obviously not Krishna's plan. So let me go. So we should endeavor to do what is right for our particular situation, where we're at mentally, because we're not all mentally ready to become sannyas or fully renounced. So wherever we're at mentally, we should endeavor, but always balancing. Well, you know, just like I remember for myself, I struggled trying, because it was vogue or cool for devotees to have their own businesses back in the 80s, you know, and that was the only way to really be a grihastha. You know, brahmanas never work for anyone else. They're horrible, you know, so you have to have your own business. So devotees were out making businesses, and it was kind of going that they were good. Everyone else was, oh, this guy's a fringy, he's in Maya. I tried, you know, with Keshi Hunter Prabhu and another devotee in Alachua. We were all kind of living between Gitanagari and Boston, and it was like we tried these businesses, and we're losing money left and right, and you know, I am not a business minded, you know, how to hold a business and create a business and manage a business. So then I'll just go into the workforce. So, and from that, you know, there was reciprocation. But again, it's all, everybody will be individual. Everyone will have, some have like this business mind. They can just very easily, without too much endeavor, and be able to, at the same time, always remember Krishna. Whereas others, they work so hard and it drags them down. So then finding that balance is, you know, that's why we always take guidance from devotees, friendship with devotees to help. Does that answer the question? All right.